On today's episode of Higher Learning, we're joined by Tushar Pandit, the Chief People Officer at SPINS. Tushar has so many great insights, and this discussion was awesome. We talked about everything from immigrating to a country and how that's helped him as a professional, what it's like to dive into a new industry, why he prefers working in startups over enterprise environments, and what it's like to be a coach for founders. Tushar has so much to say, and he's so insightful. You're going to get so much out of this conversation, just like I did. I can't wait for you to hear it.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid, and today I'm joined by a very special guest. I'm joined by Tushar Pandit, Chief People Officer at SPINS. Tushar, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you, Oz. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I'm so excited to speak with you. I'm looking forward to this discussion. Since we first talked, you have a new role, so we've got to start there. Tell us a little bit about this new role at SPINS, why it stood out to you, and what kind of the vision of the company is.
Yes, it is a little bit of a change. It was an opportunity that was presented to me, and I just had to take a look at it because of several factors that are truly aligned with not only my own personal values, but just with where the organization's mission is. It checked off of many things. One, it's a data company. So it's all about data science, and the data science profession is going to only continue to rise. So that was a first. The second aspect of it is it's very much niche in the wellness. What we mean by this is, what do we eat? What are we putting in our kids' mouths? What are we putting in our pets' mouths, right? Every one of us are reading and looking at labels when we are purchasing milk, food, avoiding processed foods, sugar content, blah, blah, blah. The third is really about the mission aspect, about doing good things. That's why I like to call it the 4 G's, right? Good for people, good for pets, good for the environment, good for the planet. And, you know, there is so much that is coming through where with also, you know, Jay, who is a newly appointed CEO coming on board, really trying to establish his leadership team. That's where, when this was presented to me, I was like, I got to pay attention to this because this is really connected to a lot of the stuff that I value, I believe in, and wanting to make a difference back again that is perhaps now above and beyond myself in such a way that I've reached the top or the peak of my career. How do I now try to help and be part of an organization that is bigger than not only myself or certainly collectively all of us, but wanting to make a difference?
Love that. So I got a couple follow-up questions. Let's talk a little bit about like the business model. Is this a B2B company? Is it a B2C company? What are the channels? How does the company make money?
It is a B2B company. So brands are our customers, retailers are customers. Insights, why is one product selling so well in one region, one store, and why is it not selling in the other? And everything is about data. We talk about it, right? Data is now knowledge. Data is power. Understanding consumer behavior, understanding consumer patterns. Things are very much changing, as we all know. And taking that insight and now starting to build either your narrative for your organization or your brand, but also for what you're trying to do. That insight helps with investment, with repositioning. It helps with where the consumer is going to focus on and why you want to be able to do it. A lot of the brands, especially when you are new to market, you are going to know and need details, insights, so that eventually, because the objective for a new consumer CPG brand or product is to get into the retailers, right? So how are you going to convince Kroger to carry you? How are you going to convince for you to be part of Whole Foods or Amazon or 365? And that's how we help the brands and retailers to really drive volume and profit margins. That's all we appreciate that explanation.
Hey, listen, I find that stuff interesting. I think our listeners find that stuff interesting. We want to know how these businesses work. So I appreciate you giving us that level of detail. It does sound very exciting. It is a field and space that we all know is just going to continue to grow and be transformative for all consumers and businesses as we go forward. It's definitely something we're putting a lot of focus into here at our company at MSHNA on. So I can certainly appreciate that. When you come in as the chief people officer with the CEO, are you coming in to kind of support and maintain what's already been in place? Are you coming in for a large remit in terms of transformation, like something in between? Like, what was kind of the soul to you is like what your job is coming in and what they're looking for in terms of your vision and your role?
I would say that it's more towards enhancement and transformation. If I'm looking at my own self, I know I'm not a maintenance person. I'm just not. I need challenges. I need to be part of something that we are building towards, having that journey. And it's really about optimizing that employee experience, as we all know. And the way you do that is through true commitment in people's development. That's what keeps talent. We know this. It's not only just about attracting talent, because anyone can attract talent. When you want to retain that talent, you've got to clearly demonstrate you're helping people with their professional development toolkit. I'm a big fan of toolkits. That's what people are asking for and looking for. What am I going to learn now more? What am I adding? How am I going to take on a new opportunity? And what are those paths looking like? Am I always going to have to just do what I have studied? And that doesn't exist anymore. Just like vertical career, those days are long gone. You're going to have to take horizontal stretch assignments. You're going to have to take perhaps diagonal assignments. But most importantly, people want to know that, you know what, I've liked it. I didn't think I was going to be good at it, but now I've got the chance of getting it done. That support and that development is what matters. And really, Jay's commitment, along with the entire ELT's commitment, is how do we enhance this? How do we make this employee journey amazing, where people are like, I'm not only making a difference, being part of a mission-centric organization, but I'm also gaining for my own growth and development. So that excited me right off the bat. Two, it's, you know, you just said this, all of these things, or watching what we intake into our bodies, is no longer a nice thing. It's no longer an elite thing, when all of us who are old enough to know that when the organic journey began in the early 1990s or the mid 1990s, it's now about $900 billion space where every single thing matters and focuses. So how do we tap into that? How can we go beyond not only the United States? Because there is so much potential out there, and wanting to come back and drive all of that is all through our talent, you know, and above all, not only that, but that insight focus, where you are now competing with not only talent, but it's talent in a unique level, in such a way the fight for data scientists is across the board. Every industry is looking for them. Every space is looking for them. Every company size is looking for them. And then how do you bring all of that in, really driving that CPG profession with the insights, the retail, all of the marketing background? So there's a full variety. And I found that very exciting for myself, which is, so these are all of the reasons why I wanted to come on board, because it's a learning curve for me.
I love it, man. It sounds like a fantastic opportunity. Congratulations. I'm really happy for you. It sounds like you're really excited about the opportunity. So that's amazing. You know, what's interesting is we kind of look back throughout your career. You've been in some very large enterprise environments, and then you kind of made a pivot, and that's a startup term, but you made a pivot into the startup space. And now you're another high growth company now. I guess my question for you is, how I find that to be one of the biggest transitions you can make in your career. A lot of times the things that make you successful in a large enterprise environment are very different than what make you successful ultimately in a startup environment, and vice versa. So that transition can be tough. Did you have like a moment like where you were working in an enterprise environment and cutting through some red tape, or just dealing with another BS meeting? And then you're just like, I'm on to startups? Or how was that transition for you? Help me understand kind of that thought process as you moved into that world and why it fit you so well.
Another meeting as a thought never crosses anyone's mind, you know, irrespective. I laugh at your comment, because it's a real life comment, and perhaps one of the reasons why it exists, you know. And if no one has read it, and I'm sure many people have, Death by Meeting by Patrick Lencioni is a one must read, because it'll just, another meeting.
Great, and you get it. Great book. Yep.
For me, you know, it really came down to two things. And I give credit to my mentor, because they've always said that in life, it's always about influence and impact, or I squared. You know, when you are in very large global organizations, your impact level is extremely minimal. And if you want to be able to see and achieve more, you can get it, but it's going to be extremely difficult. Not everyone can be a public company CEO. Not everyone can be a public company C-suite. And so for me, it was, how can I get to get more of this? And, you know, it's also my mind, the way it operates. I've always believed that the people organization, or at least my mantra, is, you know, business-led, insights-architected, insights-driven. Again, I give credit because the former CHRO at ADP used to say a lot of that as well. And it's so true. So when you combine, and for me, by combining all of these, I realize that a midsize or a startup is going to give me that. And not only will it give me what I'm looking for from an impact perspective, it's going to put me in positions that I've either never done or are going to absolutely get me out of my comfort zone and challenge me, you know? And that has happened. Being at two startups, especially the last one, I came across problems and I would bring it up. And the founder and the CEO turned around and said, well, you're always talking about this. Guess what? It's yours now. Go fix it. I've never led tech ops. Well, I guess you're going to have to somehow figure it out. And it's amazing because as much as we talk about this in leadership development, in order for you to grow and develop and challenge yourself, you have to get yourself out of the comfort zone. And so that's why I enjoyed being in startups. And very quickly, you realize then when you're in that side, a lot of the large global corporate processes are not going to exist. You're going to get to speed is the answer. You've got to get to the decision very, very quickly. And it's, you know, as product teams talk about viable product, it's speed to the game and fast to the market. You very quickly realize as long as it's not going to break or create a disaster, move fast and move fast very, very quickly. You don't need the 15 processes.
Yeah, there's a couple things that stand out.
That's why I left.
Yeah, there's a couple things you said that stand out to me. So I also started my career in corporate America, Fortune 500 company. I did it for about 4 or 5 years, did well, got promoted, had some success. Ultimately, there were two things that got me out of that space and wanting to be in that space. First one was, like you, I'm motivated by impact. I'm not motivated by title or validation or money or any of those things. I want to know that my work is meaningful and impactful. And working in a very large environment like that, especially when you're as siloed as they tend to put you into these types of roles, it really kind of bothered me that, like, if I missed a day of work, 2 weeks of work, like, nothing changes, nothing happens. Like, it's not like you're not that important at the end of the day in that job. Like you said, your ability to make an impact is somewhat minimal. And for me, like, I didn't love that. Like, there's a lot of people who would like say, hey, listen, I want to be able to take 2 weeks off and not have to worry about it. For me, it felt like something was missing if I wasn't having that much impact on what I was doing, the company I was working at. And of course, I was pretty early on in my career at that point. So that was something that was really, really important to me. And then the other side of it was the growth was too incremental. Like, it's not really a true meritocracy in a lot of these organizations. And so what I mean by that is, like, I'd be working with people sometimes double my age who are in similar roles. I'd be showing up at 6:30 in the morning. I'd be leaving at 8 o'clock at night. I'd be taking on work that I didn't need to. And I would get my 10% raise bump and I'd get good performance reviews and things like that. But I was just kind of incrementally moving my way up. And I realized that if I wanted to be the CEO of one of these companies one day, two things. One, to get to the top of that mountain is going to take a lot of time and a lot of impact. And the worst part is much of it is not even going to be based on how you do your job. A lot of it is going to be based on your network, your knowledge, the way you can play politics. Like, we know all the things that happen in corporate America to ultimately be successful. And so for me, I was like, I'm out. I can do this stuff. I have zero interest in doing this for the rest of my career. I want to work somewhere where if I do the right things, if I get things done, if I overachieve, I'm rewarded for it. And my opportunity to rise my career is there. And so that was something that when I left that company, I went to a boutique company and literally I was starting to get into the executive search space. And I was in a company of six people. And the owner of the company, I knew that if I didn't deliver, his kids weren't eating. Or like, you know, it was that kind of touch and go. And so for me, that really drove me and that really kind of put a lot of fire in me. And then eventually when I started my own company, one of the things I really, really appreciated was the ability to join and work with these different companies, right? Large companies, startups, everything in between. Typically, they want you there, but also you're going in, you're kind of like parachuting in, seeing their challenges and problems, helping them solution them, and then you can parachute back out. And so it's fun because you get to see and learn from all these different environments and experiences. You get to be part of these unique cultures. And then yet I can go back to the world that we've created over here that feels comfortable, feels right. And even if I can see all the flaws going on at these other places, I can come back here and I can either apply what works over there or I can feel good about my home state. So those are some things that really stood out to me and why I agree with you. And I felt much, much better. And the last thing I'll say about it is, I tell a lot of the young professionals here, a good bit of advice is be somebody, get to be known as somebody that gets things done, gets shit done, just like you with the tech ops, right? It's very, very valuable in your career when leadership can look at you or customers can look at you and they can throw a problem your way. And it doesn't matter what it is or what the area of expertise is, you can figure out how to get it done. You can go contact the right people. You can get that done. And so I think that's something that in a startup environment is really valued. That versatility is very valued. And that's why this is the world for me. Now, hopefully one day we build it into an enterprise organization and I'm having to figure out how I navigate that and cut out all the red tape and pointless meetings. But before we get there, I'm really enjoying the journey. So that's kind of my take on that.
And you're focusing on the right thing. You just said it. You're right. It's enjoying that journey. Sometimes we because most of us usually are the ones that are we like to win and we want to be at the top of our game. And as with time, we start to realize that, you know what? Just don't look at that short moment. As you're looking at the whole long horizon, also enjoy the accomplishment at the goalposts as you're achieving, because those don't happen just out of the sky. Effort has gone into it. Your commitment to deliver has occurred. So rejoice and congratulate certainly yourself and the team of achieving that.
Appreciate it. And listen, we don't just like to win here. We're built to win.
Great,
That's
built
what
to
we
win.
do.
There you go.
I wanted to ask you, man. So as we talk about your career journey, you've overcome a lot professionally as an immigrant coming to this country. And you felt the most important thing that comes with that is optimizing your talent around that career journey because nothing you are born with, but you acquire that knowledge and experience along the way. And one of the things you and I shared about is that as an immigrant, there's a lot more adversity that you have to face. There's a lot more like assimilation that comes into place. There's a lot more learning that comes into place. So I'm just interested, how can you elaborate on why that philosophy has worked for you and for the companies you've worked at?
I don't know if that's I have the secret formula. I would say that it really comes down to as a kid, and I still remember my parents always saying this, is I just was one of those individuals who were like, but tell me why. That curiosity and that desire to learn still exists even today. The second piece of that was understanding and realizing that, which I still have, I'm sure as everyone can hear it now, that accent was not going to stop. Three, helping and understand that every culture, every person has some sort of stigma and stereotype because society is built on it. We call it like it is. Every society thrives on creating stereotypes of someone else that's different from them. So there's battle inside me to help and overcome that. And the four was refusing to let a no be the standing final decision. Oh, inside, and I see this even with especially students that I mentor, someone told them no. I have had students telling me, including and going through this my own experience, when a counselor is like, yeah, I don't think you're going to make it through over there. The back of my mind is like, you just said and put me a dare. Watch me prove you wrong. So that fire was a thing. As I continued to grow and once I got into the business world, I started to perhaps appreciate the things that I was embarrassed as a child. I wanted to get rid of my accent when I came to Canada. You go through these things. Every kid goes through that. I wanted to be part of the norm. I am so grateful that my accent 3 decades later hasn't gone. And you have to appreciate the distinguishing culture that exists. The Canadian culture is very different from the American culture. There are many similarities, which is very different from the Kenyan culture. And then throwing my Indian heritage. So I think so what ended up happening, I led with saying that, I think I'm a great soup and these are the uniquenesses I bring to the table. That getting validated with the work ethic, to me, when you talk about GSD, that's a mantra I talk about day in and day out. Very quickly, people will start to realize who you are is a positive. You're just making the entire team different and unique. But at the core, you're still what most of us want. I want to be part of a winning team. I care. I want to make a difference. And at that point in time, whether people admit it or not, you just happen to be one of us who is all about making sure that we can get things done.
So we don't say GSD here, Tushar. We say make shit happen. So just so you know, okay?
MSH.
Build that into your lexicon. Let me empathize with you a little bit here because I went through something very similar. So as many people know, I'm half Indian, half German. I came from two very unique cultures, but I grew up, essentially in my mom's house around my mom's family, which is Indian. And so I got a lot of that culture growing up. And as I got to high school, I lived in Arizona and I went to a very upper middle class Caucasian school. And especially in high school, I started to really, to your point, I wanted to keep my mom and that side of my family completely to the side, never brought them for teacher parent conferences, kind of trying to keep that there. I would, I don't have an accent, but I'd always try to kind of downplay my skin tone and my culture. I remember at one point, when you cook Indian food, there's like onion smells that just permeate throughout your house. And that used to get on my clothes. And I remember I'd have to change my shirt on the car on the way outside before I went to school. So I'd have one shirt on, change it, put a new one on and go on the bus. So people wouldn't mock me or laugh at me because I was so ashamed. Even my name, I was like, man, I just wish my name was like Mitch or Chris or something like that. And then over time, I started to realize the power in all of that, why that made me who I was, why that was actually super impactful and made me different and unique and special. And that I actually started to lean into that. And now I would tell you, my cross-cultural background is my power, is my superpower, my ability to assimilate into both of these cultures and have understanding of them and be an American and feel comfortable in many different rooms and have my heritage be a part of my DNA and who I am, ultimately has been what's driven me, I think, to a lot of professional and personal success. So for anyone listening out there that isn't comfortable in their own skin or wishes things were different, listen, there's things you can change and I'm totally with that, physically, whatever it may be, but there's many things you can't. And what I would tell you is you can't change who you are. And if you don't love yourself, nobody's going to love you. So you got to lean into that and accept it and embrace it, most importantly. And that was something that, when I was in like many teenagers, I wanted to just fit in. Now I have zero desire to just fit in. I want to fit out for all the right reasons. And that's really helped me through my career. So it sounds like something similar for you when you immigrated to Canada and you were kind of trying to fit in, right?
It very much is that way. I mean, there was a double whammy to a certain extent. Not only you talk about the Indian, the culture aspect of it. And, what I always say is that it's got nothing to do with us being Indians to a certain extent, because at the end of the day, name me one culture that doesn't bring people together when there's food. You talk about garlic, you talk about onions. Name me one cuisine you don't use that, right? So to your point, though, when you're a teenager, you don't appreciate that. You just don't understand it. And that's just mindsets, because mindsets evolve and change with time. The older we get, the wiser we become. That's when you get to realize, oh, wow, this is incredible. And then the second element, so, coming into a brand new country, you have to overcome the stigma. So I've had to hear, oh, I guess you're from Africa, so you were hanging around monkeys. No. How did you get to school? Oh, you, I guess, were riding elephants. No, the Kenya was a former British colony. We have the same cars. So you go through all of that. And at some point in time, you have to sit back and say, even as a child, like, what the heck is all of this? Either am I that stupid or are people so stupid? And I'm not saying that in a negative way. But again, these are the mind thought. That's when, I had my parents were like, why are you not doing your part? They challenged me to say, maybe they don't know. Do you know? And when you sit back and hear that, you say, actually, my voice does have some sort of power, even as a teenager. And you see the millennials and Gen Zs leveraging that now more than ever before. But the other thing, and this is where I really appreciate it, because my dad would always say this, being a classic accountant, let alone an Indian accountant, so you can only imagine growing up in that household, was you have to make sure that at the end of the day, there are things that you can't change. You have a 10 from the day you were born, and you're going to have a 10 the day you die. Okay, good. If you think you can change that, have at it. Let your work speak for itself. Let your character speak for itself. And competencies and development. And I would say that that is why I thrive when I get to, when I am coaching, when I'm in leadership development, because who you are, whether you're Caucasian, whether you are African American, whether you are Indian, it has, whether you are Japanese, it has nothing to do with it at the end of the day. What will come through that and tag you with that will be who you are, your character, and how you demonstrate your competencies personally and professionally. Because how you show up at home is as equal as how you show up at work.
I love that. You are spot on. I want to ask you, because you brought up startups. We talked about coaching. You've done executive coaching throughout your career, but you really have a niche around working with founders in the early round funding stage. I'm interested, why does that role interest you? And then, like, what makes you uniquely qualified to understand these leaders? Because I've met many founders. I am a founder like this, and it's a unique psyche. It's very different than your kind of traditional corporate executive. So I'm just interested, why this space, and why do you feel like you're qualified to be able to speak to this space?
Well, I'm going to assume for a second that I'm qualified because I truly believe that I have still more to learn.
Sure.
You're a founder, so you know what goes through this. And that is, we call it in the world, especially with entrepreneurs, another tech word is founderitis. Okay. So this is your baby. And as far as you're concerned, you want your baby to perhaps graduate with honors. But you also have a caveat that, yeah, but that's still my baby. I'm still going to change it, the diaper, the way I want to, with the brand and the color that I've chosen. Because it doesn't matter what Tushar says or anyone else, there's no one who knows my baby more than I do. That is a DNA trait of a founder. That is a mindset. And you absolutely need to applaud that. Like everything else in life, there's a plus and a minus about it. You can't get obsessed about that either at the same time. You talked about your first job that you knew that if you didn't deliver, that owner's kids are not going to. When you're a founder, what, 50 items are going through your brain at any given time? Will I make payroll? Where's the product? What's my GTM? And I know we may not talk about it, but you know, this concept of the 1980s and the 1990s, more than ever, I would say in the last 18 months, is real. It's a simple thing. No sales, no revenue, no company. I don't know how about you, but for the past few years, I would say that somehow at times that has been forgotten. When you're with a founder, when you're with an entrepreneur, when you're with a startup, day in and day out, you're talking about that. No sales, no revenue, no company. So that weight is on your shoulder. I have 15 people who are on my payroll. I have 80 people. I have 280. I have 740. That pressure as a valve, as a weight, as a caring leader doesn't go away. And when you, what I like to say is, LIC. And usually everyone will ask me, what do you mean, LIC? Lead with insights, lead with care. I'm not saying that corporate leaders don't care. That is not what I'm saying. But it goes back to what we talked about. Your scope is much more narrower in a corporate environment, in our larger enterprise. Your scope is a lot more wider in a startup, you know, with a founder. The final thing I would also say, and this is the coaching part about it, is whether you're a founder or you're a CEO or you're both, as we know, as you know, it is the most loneliest position in an organization. Every other leader can come to HR, can go to someone else, can go to the mentor. Who is the CEO going to? Yes, you have the board. But okay, at some point in time, there are things that you don't want to talk to the board about. You may just need to vent. You may just need to get it off your chest. Well, you don't have any peers. The entire executive team is your direct reports. You may have an HR leader where you have trust or you don't. That's your decision. So unless you're part of a CEO network where you can go and speak to others who are in the same seat as you, it's very lonely. I highly champion every leader should get a coach. Coaching is not a negative thing, and I'm not promoting it. I'm simply stating the fact. It's tied to business outcomes. When you play sports, any child, any kid, you're not always getting coached by the head coach. You have side coaches. Why are coaches with you? They want you to get better. They know you can perform more. They're going to make sure you deliver great results. Finally, the business world is seeing that, and that's why I champion it, encourage it, every leadership at some point in time. But that's why I like to. Selfishly, I learn. I learn. I've sat with CMOs, with CTOs, transformation officers, CIOs. I've just borrowed a lot of the knowledge that they've shared and implemented it into the HR practice. And that's how you get to evolve and see how business operates. Everyone wants a business problem solver.
Totally agree. I mean, I have coaching in my life. I have mentorship in my life. I formed an advisory board at one point when I was feeling that same sense of loneliness. And like you said, there's just a certain level of things that you can't really communicate with different people in the organization, or people outside of your organization wouldn't truly understand. It's a much needed thing. We all need that insight, that being able to look at things from a 30,000 foot view, but also have somebody that can help you drive that business, so it doesn't feel like you're pulling that whole thing by yourself. So totally with you. I've had one throughout my career, have one currently, and it's paid big time dividends and benefits for me. So
it's tied to business outcomes, right? I mean, you're just saying it. It's tied to business outcomes. This is not about, and there's a separate side of coaching to that. That's a whole different story and on another element of it. But this is what I'm trying to do. This is where I feel if I do this, the downstream impacts, how do I manage it through? And that's how effective leaders very quickly demonstrate and implement a vision when there are so many people who are looking at you to help lead it that way.
Love it. I love it. We do got to pay our bills here. So we got to talk a little bit about some hiring, something I know you've done throughout a lot of your career. Maybe it's something that you're currently thinking about, strategizing about it, spins. And so I want to ask you some questions and get some thoughts from you on in terms of your perspective. So first one is, do you have a core hiring philosophy for when you're hiring people for your team or people that you bring into your organization?
Traits that I can't teach you.
Okay. So give us examples of that. What are you looking for?
Like, absolutely. Tell me your opinion. Yeah. If you don't believe in customer care, it's not going to work. Values that we all grew up with. Being on time is being late. I still quote my first CEO. If you're on time, you're already late. Work ethic. Look, at the end of the day, if I live in a world that doesn't exist, I'd love to just sit there and do work for 5 minutes and still get a beautiful paycheck. If that were the case, all of us would be trillionaires. You got to put in. Hard work efforts will give you success. It just doesn't happen overnight like this. Be ready to make some sacrifices. Life is a journey, and it's not going to happen overnight. You want to go and get a PhD? It takes 7 years. There are going to be sacrifices no matter what you do. Love numbers. You don't have to adore numbers. You don't need to be the next CFA and a CFO. Everything is a number at the end of the day. So appreciate fractions. Be ready. Doesn't matter who you are. You're going to be in sales. Become an attorney. Become the managing partner at a global law firm. Everyone is in sales. Care. Never stop caring. Doesn't matter what you do. These are things that I all automatically look for. I still remember this when I was in part-time at Blockbuster Video. Let's not talk about the brand. But every time when I was hiring, because I was an assistant manager, I'd hire someone from McDonald's on their resume instantaneously. You can run the 12 o'clock shift on a Saturday afternoon. I think you can manage videotapes. Those are the
Blockbuster.
traits
That's
we
a
look
blast
for.
from the past. I
Blast
love
from the
that. Well, so
past.
what questions do you ask to try to determine if people have those innate skills? Because it's tough in an interview situation to always understand the true person. So what type of questions do you, what are your favorite to ask, maybe to determine
Just
some of those
simple
things?
questions that are very direct. Tell me of a time when you created a disappointment to a customer. What happened? How did you resolve it? Tell me if a time, this is my favorite question. Tell me of a time when you made a error in judgment. Do not use recruitment as an example. Very quickly, when people are able to be vulnerable, even as a candidate and as a leader, these are not trap questions. These are not illegal questions. What you're trying to evaluate is how do you solve for this? We talked about problem solving. That's what work and teams do day in and day out. We are solving for problems. We are making sure that we can move the needle forward. We want to get to this line. So ask questions that are relevant where people actually are going to be able to say, this is what I had to do. This was a mistake. How many times do we talk about failure, but yet we can't ask about failure? Why not? Failure is great. Disasters is not. So when people are demonstrating and being vulnerable to you, this is how I learned, champion that because you know they are not going to make that mistake again because they care. So you can work it both ways.
Love that. What about a memorable interview experience? If I ask you, maybe you were interviewing or you were interviewing somebody, what comes to mind when I ask you that?
Memorable, positively or negatively? I got two and I was like,
You
wow,
tell us.
this
You
is
don't got
a.
to name any names. I
No,
think
I'm
that
not
people love
naming
the negative
anyone.
ones
Yeah, but
more.
the one was when a candidate answered the cell phone to schedule and confirm another interview while they were in the interview with me. I'm like,
So what did
wow.
they say? How did you know? Yeah, I'll be there at that time, or what? Like, what was the conversation they had?
Literally, they just continued on having that conversation saying, yes, I recall applying over there. Oh, I'm getting an interview. I appreciate it. Thanks very much. Yeah, this day and time works. Puts the phone down and then just continues on with the rest of the question as if nothing was happened. And I was just left, okay, this is interesting. And so after I allowed them to finish their sentence, I said, I want to thank you for your time, but this interview is over. We are not going to move forward. It is completely unacceptable. I gave them direct feedback and they were A-okay with that. So very quickly,
Like,
we
okay,
realized.
thanks. See you
Yep.
later.
Yeah. And that was in person too.
That's amazing.
Well,
I'm
that's when
impressed.
you're like, wow, okay, you know, nothing surprises me anymore, but that was validated. And
Hopefully,
another
they
one
got
I
that
would
other
even say
job.
was,
Otherwise, that was a mistake. I would have
yeah,
let it go to
I was
voicemail.
glad that, absolutely, that was a blessing in disguise because that could have been a problem in the future.
Sure. Awesome. I love it. What about, how do you create it? Like, you've got a new company, right, that you're at, and you want people to understand what it's like to work at Spins, but you're relatively kind of figuring things out too. Do you do anything unique in the interview process where you can kind of convey what that employee value proposition is, or you can give them a realistic job preview of what to expect working with you, working at the company? Like, what do you do outside of just the questions you ask? Is there anything you do to kind of curate that experience in a specific way?
Right. So, you know, it's most organizations and teams usually go through this. As a candidate who's going to be successful, you're going to go through several rounds. And the reason why we do that is also because, again, the candidate experience is critical. We want to truly show you how we are operating day to day. And also for you to really validate that this is the culture that you want to be an add-on to. We all are add-ons at the end of the day for any organization's culture. The thing from a people perspective that I really want to ensure for all the hiring leaders is that was there a clear, consistent theme? Were there any surprises for you? And we validate that when we run the candidate survey at the end, whether they are successful or not. Because what I do not want to see in the feedback is one said red, the other one said green, the other person said blue, because then it clearly shows that we are not aligning our strategies. That is not a positive experience. So that's how we validate that first. The second element, and I haven't had the time here at Spins, but in my previous organizations, what we always do is the career profile, right? So when you look at the website, having vignettes, I'm a big champion for having vignettes, including videos, going and interviewing all of the teams that we have, creating these YouTube videos up to 2.5 minutes, let people know. Even if they're interested in us or not, just a day in the life is a really big thing. And every organization should make a focus in trying to create that, because every company, every industry is not for everyone. Just like as we say, we cannot be everything to our customers. We have to take that marketing focus and growing it. This is who we are. This is what we do. This is how we do it. This is a day in the life of. Now you take it and take a look at it and say, yes, this works for me. Yes, this does not work for me. We are not a public global 10,000 marketing insights company. There is a company out there that is there. We don't want to be that either. So that's how we try to show it. And what people appreciate, and this is why, whether you're talking about TikTok, whether you're talking about YouTube, forget the brands for a second. It's the mode of communication. Video is the number one mode of communication today. Who reads? Even if it's an email, even if it's a Slack message, even if it's a team message, many people do read, but people are skimming it through, right? A video, especially, again, marketing 101, communications 101, when you have snippets, 30-second clips, 2.5 or 1.5, now you're getting your audience. Not only are you getting your click rates up, but you're getting your engagement. You can convert those. Again, from a TA perspective, if it's out there, we want to convert those clicks into resumes that are qualified. Passive candidates. That's how we're going about getting it done.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a curveball for you. And I might add this
Of
to the
course you
rotation
do.
forward. Who's the, and you don't have to give me a name, but who's the best hire you've ever made and why?
Oh wow. I would have to
Exactly, write that
say
down. We're using that one going forward. Tushar just made me think of it. So we're going to add that to the rotation. Go ahead.
it's at my last organizations, my head of talent management and learning development. She is an absolute brilliant individual who started her career as a legal assistant and has grown all the way up to become a vice president. She can take what she does with a PowerPoint, because of her background, we know her earlier career, just leaves me in awe, to having a brand within the organization of implementing phenomenal career pathing, mentoring programs, driving why calibration matters, creating effective business results that even business executives were coming to me and saying, I actually want to take her onto my team. That is what matters. And I just, every single time she produced work, I would just sit back. Not that she is, but I would just have this proud parent feeling, because it just was implemented so well. And business executives, business people, talent who was walking through and saying, I just had the most phenomenal time with her, because she was a great business partner, but a great organizational coach that people appreciated and respected.
Did you know in the interview?
I knew she was great. I did not know until I saw her work how I what is a better word for great? Platinum?
Yeah, I don't know. But I would say this. You never know in the interview. Anybody who says that is disingenuous and like, now you can have a good feeling, you can feel strong about it, but we've had those feelings before. And then when the rubber hits the road, it's like, this isn't what I thought I was getting. That happens. It's
Well,
always.
yes, it does. And that's why your reference is valid. Now, luckily, I knew her leader, who also was a reference, and so I knew that I was my, but absolutely, there is no guarantee, and there's no one who can sit there and say that I interview this candidate, they are going to be 100%. I think they would be fooling themselves if they said that.
We're not there yet. MSH wants to help with that, but we're not there yet. But I think the most important thing is the best hires always, no matter how high you are on them in the interview process, they always exceed expectations on a
Right.
day-to-day basis with their output, with their work ethic, with everything that they do. So totally aligned with you
It
out
goes
there.
back to because they care. They brand, they understand that what they are putting out is a reflection of who they are, what they speak for, and their character. These
Those
are
things
things that are
you.
ingrained in you from day one.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. Now I'm going to go back to kind of the Indian culture. I remember my mother telling me all the time, when you put your name behind any type of work, you're putting your name behind it, honor in our name. Because that was something that was so drilled into my head, I take a lot of pride in my work for that reason. And that's something that I
Absolutely.
see throughout that culture and other cultures all across the world, particularly in East Asia, East Asian culture. So I just think that that's something that maybe that's a little bit of an unlock there, right? That
Yeah,
understanding of your
absolutely.
name.
You're spot on. We've all grown up with that. Your name is your word. Your word is your name, and you don't go back on those things,
And the
right?
people
It's
who
in the
have that have
thing.
high integrity, and they tend to be great employees. All right, Tushar, I'm going to take this a little bit of a different direction. What are you working on right now? I mean, new company, new job. What are you working on right now that you're really excited about?
Learning an industry that I am very new to. Understanding and getting to meet the phenomenal talent that are there. It's just so much to take in. The exciting piece about all of this is, and I mean, I know this is not the topic, but just because I want to keep it by generative AI, it's here. It's not going away anywhere. Last night I was reading the Gartner AI Gen I spend. Last week the first chief HR, sorry, chief AI officer was hired. So that is something that I want to try to do more and more of because it is going to be impacting our people or organization. I want to be able to get a hiring leader to very quickly get three of his or her scorecards in a half a page statement, overall feedback, so they can hire faster. Speed is a game.
What technology are you using for that?
What's that?
What technology are you using to do
Well,
that?
I'm hoping that, well, I'm still trying to convince budgets for all of that. But look, I'm just going to take Greenhouse that we have over here, and I want to try to get our data scientists to create either a model, or can we just optimize whatever's out there right now, and then just try test it out, right? That's a beautiful part about where we are right now, experimentation and testing it. I want to try to use Gong in our interviews. I want to record the leaders so that we can give good coaching immediately. Oh, I don't have to spend more time, or neither does my TA team, right? So again, I'm excited because a lot of what sales teams and product teams are doing, I just want to be able to say, how can we get it done? We'll see what happens. Again, only 5 weeks in, so give me time. And I would say that, it's still happening very much so right now, but the PE world is also very much about enterprise value, where transformation, where you get to see a lot of the stuff happening in large global companies. The factors that are in play right now, the interest rates, you talk about mortgage rates, you talk about, there are many things that are very macroeconomic. Anyone who has studied economics, you get to learn micro and macro. Macro has not played a role probably for at least a minimum 4 to 5 decades. In the last 14, 16 months, macroeconomics are dominating every single strategy at the government levels, all the way down to companies, public or private, startup to midsize, it doesn't matter. The dominance of macroeconomics is very much in play. So, understanding what is our next half year going to look like is on my mind, along with the entire ELTs. As we get into fiscal 25 planning, I would say that that is probably the case with every single leadership team right now. And trying to get into what is keeping our CEOs awake right now. And you are one, I'd love to get your thoughts. But it's not, in my opinion, based on everything I'm hearing and seeing so far and asking, it's not the three things that I think that we are used to hearing about. And that's what I'm trying to get my head wrapped up around. What are boards and CEOs looking for the next 18 months? Because it's still going to be a bumpy ride.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I think of it from my perspective, there's macro and there's micro at my level. So there is a bunch of different global things going on right now that I'm concerned about. There is the application of generative AI and how it's going to disrupt different industries and apply for our customers. There's uncertainty of being in an election year and what that means, what's going on with our interest rates, what is the cost of capital going to be going forward, workforce, right? Productivity and motivation and engagement are all big macro factors that come into play. And then some of the micro ones are going to be, how are those factors going to play into the companies that we work with and how they hire? How is the adoption of technology going to be looked at in terms of adding to cost and things of that nature? What's it going to look like in terms of, if our company's having the type of growth that I expected to, what's that going to mean for our ability to scale and drive revenue and do things in a completely different way of the way we got here and how we get to the next stage being completely different things. So there's a lot of different things that go on. And I imagine a lot of CEOs would have some similar things to say, and maybe some very different things. But yeah, to your point earlier, there's about 50 things going on in my head at any given time. So
there you go. Those are some and I would just say one final thing to that is, so when I hear all of this, right? So when I'm asked the same thing, you're a CPO, what's keeping you awake? For me, it is the entire workforce as people and the skill sets and redevelopment of all of that, right? AI, how can we quickly implement learning that's effective learning, that's not modular based, that's not going to be not everyone can go in and take all of these courses, right? So in order for that to be ready, for our people to be ready, having the right skill sets and then delivering on everything that we are saying, that is keeping me up at night, because time is of the essence and the capabilities with what is available right now from that learning curve, that graph keeps me, scares me, because it's going to be fast, effective, and break all the rules to make it happen, along with all of the other things.
I love it. I love it. All right, Tushar, we're going to end here with this question. If you could give 20-year-old Tushar one bit of advice that you didn't know then, but that you know now, what would that advice be?
When you have the opportunity, not only never stop learning, and that I be continuously learning, be very comfortable being vulnerable. Ambiguity is your best friend. Stating that though, when you get to learn from people who have already earned those stripes, don't repeat those pitfalls, because they're giving you all that free advice so you never have to go through that. And that's not mentoring, that's true leadership and care. When I share with you that I learned this the hard way, take that. And finally, and I will say this, and this is because of what we already talked about, your name, your brand, your background is who you are. Wear that with pride and leverage it to make it easier for others, because it's only going to make it better for you.
Yep. I'll add one thing else, because we've been talking a lot about the things that our parents taught us and the words that have resonated with us. And my mom used to say something similar. A smart person learns from their own mistakes. A genius learns from other people's mistakes. And so you can learn as much about what goes well as what doesn't go well and apply that to your life. And that's something I try to do. And it sounds like you and I are very aligned and had very similar upbringings. And I really enjoy the conversations. Tushar, thanks so much for spending some time with us. Looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Thank you for your time. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. And hopefully this helps to whoever's listening.